Slate. Welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I'm your host, Michael Slate, and we've got a packed show for you today. It looks like what it's going to be for quite some time as well. At the back end of the show, we'll be hearing an interview with Kiana Salina from the Coalition for Community Control of Police in Los Angeles. We'll be talking about the murder of Dijon Kizzee by LA County sheriffs in South Central Los Angeles and the protests that have been demanding justice in the face of intense repression. And opening the show up, I'll be talking with Andy Z, the host of Revolution Nothing Less, or the RNL show, on YouTube, and the co-initiator of Refuse Fascism. Now, this interview took place prior to nationwide protests on September 21st, demanding Trump Pence out now. He'll also talk about continuous protests that are now scheduled to begin October 3rd. I'm going to begin with a statement that Andy Z recently made on the RNL show.
In today's commentary, I want to strongly encourage you to go to our website, revcom.us, and get into the new article by Bob Avakian, Voting Will Not Be Enough. We need to get in the streets and stay in the streets, demanding Trump Pence out now. The stakes on whether or not we do this, taking to the streets and staying in the streets, starting in October, could not be higher. And what is posted on revcom.us now is part one of this article, titled, The Democrats Can't Fight Trump the Way He Needs to Be Fought. Right there, this should speak to what keeps so many of us up at night. At the RNL show, we have said over the past 6 weeks, drawing from Bob Avakian's August 1st statement on the immediate critical situation, the urgent need to drive out the fascist Trump-Pence regime, voting in this election, and the fundamental need for revolution, that without relying on voting, we need to use all appropriate means to work for the Trump-Pence regime to be removed from power. This must include voting against Trump, assuming the election is actually held. As BA makes clear in this statement, this means not a protest vote for some candidate who has no chance of winning, but actually voting for the Democratic Party candidate, Biden, in order to effectively vote against Trump. And BA emphasizes, as we have said here, that simply relying on voting to oust this regime will likely be very bad and even disastrous. You can go back and watch our previous episode to hear this for yourself. I don't know about you, but every day brings me serious anger and agony over seeing once again all the passion intensity on the side of the Trump-Pence fascist campaign. Trump dominates the media as he did in 2016, spewing his racist, lying, world-destroying bullshit. This on top of MAGA boat parades and truck caravans with camouflage-wearing assholes brandishing their weapons. Thousands of people line streets and fill fascist rallies that echo the white celebrations of the 20th century of public lynchings of black people. They remind me of nothing so much as Hitler's Nuremberg rallies, and all of this is designed to inflame his fascist mob and to sap the spirit and to demoralize our opposition. Then there is the outright intimidation of a paramilitary and police who are pledging allegiance to Trump across the country while continuing to shoot down black people with what appears to be a revenge-fueled viciousness. And then there is Trump calling for retribution against protesters and saying that he will put down protests within minutes if there are protests after the elections. These are all actions of the state ordered by the Trump-Pence fascist regime. But at the same time, Trump incites armed vigilante thugs to maraud and murder the just protests of the people. And here I'm not even touching the actual fascist program and the vile bile that emanates and spews from Trump every day and all day. And in opposition to this, what do you see when the media even decides to cover the Biden-Harris campaign? A weak-ass, spiritless, and ineffective campaign with a mass base that is waiting, and patiently hoping that Biden wins, while knowing and being worried and scared shitless that on the current course, that Biden will not. And recalling once again that the polls in 2016 showed Hillary Clinton winning by a landslide. More, people have the absolutely correct worry that Trump will not leave no matter what. And some grassroots Biden forces have joined together to protect our vote, a just demand that if Trump loses and won't leave, then they will, many won't really say, but some do say, then we'll protest. But waiting till then, with a progressive base that has not been mobilized, will lead to disaster. This article by Bob Avakian, "Voting Will Not Be Enough, We Need to Take to the Streets and Stay in the Streets, Demanding Trump-Pence Out Now," digs into, in this first part, why the Democrats can't fight Trump the way he needs to be fought. To quote a great song by the Talking Heads from the 1980s, you might ask yourself why Trump is always calling his people into the streets and even to big rallies of his supporters, but Biden and the Democrats have not. You might ask yourself why, when Trump spouts outrageous lies of protesters burning down whole cities and calls for violent retribution against the overwhelmingly nonviolent demonstrations for Black lives and the demand to put an end to police murder and white supremacy, Biden and the Democrats, after first acknowledging that most of these protests have been peaceful and that it is Trump who is agitating and advocating violence, they then immediately rush to echo Trump's denunciation of supposed violence at these demonstrations. You might ask yourself why, when Trump vociferously defends the armed fascist thugs who terrorize communities and attack protests, even calling that punk with a long gun, Kyle Rittenhouse, a hero, when the whole world saw him on video murder Jojo Rosenbaum and Anthony Huber, who were defending a Black Lives Matter protest in Kenosha, Wisconsin, but Joe Biden doesn't have one word of support or defense of them and the right to protest. You might wonder why the Biden campaign is obsessed with appeasing the so-called swing voters in white suburbs in a few states. But the Biden campaign is not trying to unleash the far, far greater energies of those most directly threatened by this fascist regime and all of those the Democrats claim to represent. The masses of people of all nationalities who took to the streets in the beautiful rising this past June and July, or all those millions whose hearts ache for a just world, or why they have not activated the youth outraged by Trump's allowing the earth to burn and drown, and everyone outraged by the 200,000 dying of COVID, many unnecessarily because Trump denies science and deliberately covers up the truth. Why not mobilize all of this passion and outrage by taking on frontally Trump's racist and fascist program, but instead go on to appease the swing voters? And most of all, do you wonder what those of us who really want to stop this fascist regime from taking this country and the world to a whole other level of outright terror, lies, racism, intimidation, repression, and the rest have to do in the face of the answers to those questions of why the leadership of the Democratic Party, why the Biden campaign will not fight Trump the way he needs to be fought, and what we need to do about it? The answers, the analysis, and what we need to do is in Bob Avakian's article, "Voting Will Not Be Enough. We Need to Take to the Streets and Stay in the Streets, Demanding the Trump-Pence Regime Out Now." This is available, as I said, on revcom.us. Discuss it, read it, get it to people you know and those you don't know. Let us know what you think by writing to us at therevcoms@gmail.com. Go to our social media at the handle @TheRevComs, but then take the next step and join with Refuse Fascism and the movement to demand Trump Pence out now. Be in the streets on Monday, September 21st to march against death, lies, and fascism and for humanity, and get ready so that October is our month, not the Trump Pence fascist regime's.
All right, Andy, how you doing?
All right, Michael, how are you?
Just angry as hell, man, okay? This is like really just thinking about what the hell are we going to do? And that's one of the things I wanted to pose to you right away, because we don't have a ton of time and there's a lot of questions that people have. But I think really the big thing right now is like, look, you've said it a number of times, other people have said it. This is a very serious situation and people need to step up and step out. And it hasn't happened in the way that it needs to happen. Let's talk about what's going on and what needs to happen.
All right, Michael. Well, I'm glad to hear that you are angry as hell. I also hope it means that you can't take it anymore. And I think there's a lot of people who feel that way. And then there's a question of what do you do with that feeling that you can't take it anymore? So look, what are we going to do about this? Well, what we got to do right away is get organized. We have Refuse Fascism, as I announced in that clip that you played from the YouTube show at the RevComs called the RNL Revolution Nothing Less show. That's a weekly show being opens on Thursday every week at 5 p.m. That I called for this march across the country called the March Against Death, Lies, and Fascism and for Humanity. But the point of this march, in addition to protesting and bringing to light the 200,000 deaths unnecessarily lost, many of them, most of them, in fact, because of the science-denying Trump-Pence regime, and the fact that this has disproportionately affected Latino and Black masses of people, known it's part of the kind of genocidal white supremacist program that the Trump-Pence regime has. In addition to going to that demo, and it's very important that all different kinds of groups come out to that, this is a chance to begin to organize for what must be done, where all this anger, all this angst, all this just horror at what is happening to the immigrants, to the environment, this state burning and the South flooding, what must be done in response to that is we have to act. Nobody else is going to do this for us, and so how do we act is the question, and how do we organize? Well, how we act is starting in October. We'll be announcing the date soon, whether it's October 1st, 2nd, 3rd. But starting in October, in cities and towns across the country, we need to start protesting. Protesting every day. Declaring our intention to come back tomorrow and the next day and the next day. Growing from scores to hundreds to thousands to tens of thousands of people so that by the time this election happens, and Trump makes his move to steal it, that there are millions of people in the streets insisting that they will not leave the streets, that this country won't be governable without this regime being removed from power. And I say not governable, I mean by mass, nonviolent, mass popular protest. That's what's needed. And up against all that they will throw at us, the threats of charges, their paramilitaries, their police, and their MAGA thugs. But we have to be very clear that if we do not organize ourselves and our various social movements, our various religious communities, our various school communities, everything, everybody has to start getting out in the streets, echoing the kind of movement we saw in the streets for Black Lives in June and that we've seen in other countries where we are resolute that we have one demand that we all agree on, which is Trump Pence out now. Trump Pence out now crosses over every interest group, every sense of justice has to have and see the necessity of removing this regime. And the only way that's going to happen is by people taking to the streets.
Now, tell me this, man. You know, one of the things I've been thinking about, it's just so much to deal with in this. And I kept thinking about, you know, look, you've seen the latest filth that's come out from the L.A. County Sheriff, you know, basically accusing, you know, Dijon Kizzy about basically bringing it on himself, and they shot him 19 times. You know, there's all these things that actually just keep rolling out and rolling out and rolling out. There's a real need that's expressed, it's concentrated in what's being done to people, you know, and what's being done to people over, including even the rise of the Nazis, the open rise of the Nazis, the fact that, you know, there's these massive things that have been going on in Portland and, you know, all over and other places in the country, that these fascists are actually pulling together and coming together. And there's a real need for people to come together themselves and to see what needs to be done and to act on it. And it's not that easy to bring about. I wanted you to talk about that a little bit, because I know you're wrestling with that. Like, what the hell are we going to do to actually get people to have to understand and to move on this stuff, to understand what's happening and to move on it?
Well, I think we have to do a number of things. First off, we have to understand that this is what this system does to the people. It did it before Trump became president. The systematic oppression of Black people, police, murder, who are enforcing the relations of this system and the rule of this system. This is something that, you know, is at the foundation of this country from its inception several hundred years ago, and even since the first slaves were brought over in 1619. So this is not new in terms of white supremacy. You know, we've gone from the slave master to before the Civil War to the slave catchers and lynchings of the 20th century now to a situation where it is the police who are primarily carrying this out. But look, there have been big changes in the world that are more than we can get into in this show, that have come to a place where big, powerful forces who are part of the ruling class in this country have decided and thrown their lot in with the Trump-Pence regime and said, we need a different way of governing this country, which is what this fascism actually is. It is the same system, but it is much more openly terroristic, blatant use of violence, and where the rule of law, such as it has been, is no more. And this is why it is like a giant steamroller that is rolling down the street at the masses of people, and people have to begin to recognize and recognize, not just begin, but actually come to a conclusion, which is out there, that people can see that if what Trump is calling for and what he's doing, and you can even see this in the sheriffs, by the way, who've been violent for a long time, and they've got racist, Nazi-like gangs all riddled through them, and you can read about that on revcom.us, but you can see that they are out now and unleashed in a particularly vengeful way that has been fomented in response to the protests that have taken place. But to just get down to it, people have to come and see that every movement for justice, everything that you hate out there in the world, is going to be made qualitatively worse and by this Trump-Pence regime. They have a program. It is for a fascist, and in fact a Christian fascist America, and that at the core of that is eliminating the rule of law, which means that any form of protest you do will be what your last guest talked about, the rule of the land. And he's already said this. Trump just said that if people protest on the night of his election, he'll call it a riot, he'll call it an insurrection, and go in and send in troops to suppress it. That's what it means. That's what he's told you he's going to do. That's what the Attorney General, the highest law officer in this country, has said needs to be done. They said that protesters need to be charged with sedition, which means essentially working to overthrow your government and spying for the enemy. And it's punishable by extremely harsh penalties. This is what these people are telling you they're going to do, and you can see them already beginning to do it. And not only through their paramilitaries and their police, which have killed almost 20 people already in these Black Lives Matter protests, and their fascist mobs who have, actually the police haven't killed 20, but the fascist mobs and people running trucks into people and shooting people, all of this is going to be the rule of the land if we don't drive this regime out.
Yeah, that's exactly the case, and that's the thing, though. That's what's posed before a lot of people right now. Is then, what do they do about it? You know, how do they do this? Because it's, you know, I've seen and I've been part of it myself, like trying to really wrestling with people to get out into the streets to take stands, and it's actually going to take something to really move people in a way that they'll actually be carrying out the kind of things that we need to have done. So let's talk about that for a minute.
Okay, so I think what we have to do about that is we, again, people should come out this week to the protest on Monday, and then we need to get together. People can start getting together today in your communities, in your organizations, and start making plans concretely. How are we going to take to the streets in Los Angeles and in different cities around the country for people who hear this elsewhere? How are we going to organize ourselves so that there's groups of people coming out every day? How is that going to actually work? Who needs to be there? How, if you have a group, say, organized around protecting the environment or police brutality, whether it's in Inglewood in Chicago or South Central in Los Angeles or one of the suburbs, how do we actually bring our demand for justice for a particular victim of police brutality or for Black Lives Matter generally, how do we bring that demand into the streets as part of a movement to say Trump Pence out now? If you're in a religious community that stands for justice, has been working around immigrant rights, whether it's Jewish, Christian, or Muslim, working around those questions, how does that gather in the town square, raising that demand and bringing it into the struggle for Trump Pence out now? What people have to recognize is that while it would be important to vote in this election to be able to vote against Trump and for Biden in the sense of a candidate who could actually win, and the more margin he wins by, the more legitimacy other people will see in our struggle to remove Trump, because Trump has already told you that he can only lose if the election is stolen from him, and he'll have his forces in the street. So we have to have ours in the street in overwhelming numbers in nonviolent protest up against the kind of fascist stuff that his supporters are doing. Right now, they have the initiative. They're out in the streets every day across this country. Caravans of 7,000 trucks, boat caravans going on, lawn signs everywhere. And the Biden campaign thinks they can play by the rules. They're playing by rules that the Trump-Pence regime will not respect. So we have to actually start organizing now and figuring this out. Groups of lawyers, groups of people who want to provide medical aid. We know this can be done. People were doing this all through June and July. But people have to start recognizing the danger that presents and acting in response to that. Refuse Fascism will be calling meetings to help organize this, and we can organize some of it, but there's lots of other groups of very different political persuasions and Refuse Fascism, and then the RevComs, but all of us have to understand that this regime poses an existential danger to justice and to humanity itself in their devastation of the environment, the threat of war, and any movement for social justice could be disastrously and will be disastrously set back if this regime prevails and stays in power past January. And this is very important. Those of us who are working, like myself and you, I hope, are working for a revolution, this is very much part of that struggle, because if we drive out this regime through mass protest, that means that there's more space, more receptivity to different ideas and the possibility of organizing and continue to organize for an actual revolution. If your view is some form of social reform, understand that too will be space for that gets opened up, but it will be completely foreclosed should this regime prevail. And I do want to recommend that your viewers go to RevCom and look at the article on Modi from India and what happened when he was elected to a second term. This is another Hindu fascist. And right away, almost overnight, they established martial law in the most horrific way in the Kashmir, a big part of India on the border of Pakistan. They revoked essentially the citizenship of millions of Muslim refugees, many who had been in the country for even two generations. It became an absolute horror show, including around COVID. Time and time again, you cannot allow fascism to stay in power. It's illegitimate, frankly, no matter how it comes to power, whether through a fair or fraudulent election. But we have a moment now. We have about 50 days when we can build a protest movement in the streets every single day, growing to millions of people. And for people who are saying, if he steals the election, then we'll protest. No, you won't. First off, the Democrats are probably going to tell you to wait to see what happens in the courts and Congress. Meantime, the other forces are going to be out in the streets. They're going to be intimidating you, and they've already told you they're going to throw massive force at you, and you won't come out. And it's not going to be easy, Michael, for us to forge the unity necessary to do this, as you said before. But to establish that unity, we have to start working on it now. We don't have to agree on a lot of things. What we have to agree on is Trump-Pence out now.
Mm-hmm. All right, Andy, you have like 1 minute, 1 minute and a half to say what you want to get out that you don't want people to miss, that you want to move people with, and I'll stop talking so you can actually say it, all right?
All right. Well, I appreciate that this is kind of we're proselytizing for something that matters. The hour is late. This is the time. We are going to do this in October, okay? And we're going to start on Monday, September 21st, in a march against death, lies, and fascism and for humanity, which will just be about the time, the 200,000 mark of people who died unnecessarily due to COVID and the science denial of the Trump-Pence regime. But the point here is to get organized starting now for day after day protests in the streets of Los Angeles and in all the small communities that surround here, with that single demand that unifies all of our protests. Doesn't mean we lose our particularity, but we unify around that to demand this regime come out, because the future depends on it. And ain't nobody going to come and save us here. The Democratic Party is not going to wage this campaign and win the election the way you want it, and Trump's not going to listen to it if he loses. So as that old saying goes, we are the ones we've been waiting for. We have the power. Let's use it but we've got to get organized starting today. And, you know, people can contact us at refusefascism.org or at revcom.us to reach the movement for an actual revolution under the leadership of Bob Avakian. I guess I'll leave people with that.
All right, Andy. Thank you very much, man. And I look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Okay. Thanks, Michael. Take care.
Take care.
You stay angry.
You too, man. Hi, you've been listening to Andy Z, and we've been talking on the Michael Slate Show, which is me, and I want to thank everybody that was involved in pulling this together today, and all the people that are going out there in the streets now, that should be going out there in the streets and are thinking about it, do it. This is one of those nodal points in the history of humanity. It's something that can make a huge difference each way. If we don't do it, it's going to make a horrible difference. If we do it, we have a chance. We have a chance of actually rising above all this and actually living like human beings, you know, not living in the kind of nonsense that we've been, the horrors that we've been forced to live in.
We're going to take a quick musical break and be right back, so stay tuned. That was Outer National with Fighting Song. Now let's hear my interview with Kiana Salina from the Coalition for Community Control of Police in Los Angeles.
Kiana, tell me something. You know, I met you just in a flash, you know, and I was trying to interview some people around what's been going on in South Central LA and the rest of the whole city, and then frankly all over the country, mm-hmm. and especially around the, you know, police murdering of people and a fight against the police murdering of people. Mm-hmm. And people really coming out into the streets and taking this on. And you were one of the people who a number of people said to me, you gotta talk to Kiana. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I met you and then decided, yes, I do have to talk to you. So why don't we talk about this? You've been involved in this, and you made a comment a little bit earlier about going from being someone who was here taking care of your home and doing other stuff to becoming a fighter against police brutality and police murder. Let's talk about that.
Well, you know, when I moved to Los Angeles, you know, that's when I really got heavily involved with the fight against police terrorism. So it's for the greater part of a decade. I've been a grassroots organizer. We've done a lot of things that maybe people just don't know that, you know, it was us. But with the Mike Brown protests that were 2 days, you know, hundreds of people took the streets in November of 2014, we organized that. We started the protests against District Attorney Jackie Lacey, and that started with Ezell Ford, who was murdered 2 days after Mike Brown, and, you know, their demand for prosecution. So that's where, you know, just a few days after Ezell Ford's murder, that was the first protest in front of District Attorney Jackie Lacey's office, and we kept that up, you know, consistently for years. And then Black Lives Matter picked up that banner at the end of 2017, you know, but that movement is, you know, over six years old, and that was on account of us, you know, uniting the families of Ezell Ford and Omar Abrego, who were killed just days and blocks apart by the same Newton Division of LAPD, and saying, you know, let's unite them with those other families and get out there and push against District Attorney Jackie Lacey.
Now tell me something, when you mentioned Black Lives Matter, mm-hmm. I think that's an extremely important thing for people all over to understand, because there's something very important that's concentrated in that. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times sometimes people don't understand what it is actually concentrated, why it's so important mm-hmm. for that to be out in the atmosphere today, mm-hmm. for that to be attracting people and bringing people into wanting to stand up and fight against the incineration of Black people all over the country. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about, what is it that really made you want to get into that?
You know, it was actually Trayvon Martin's murder initially that got me into the fight. I'd wanted to get involved in the fight with Oscar Grant, who was murdered in Oakland, but unfortunately I was dealing with an injury at the time. So when Trayvon Martin was murdered, even though I was still recovering from a car accident and subsequent spine surgery, a friend of mine said, hey, I just need you to write a poem for me and show up and just do your poem. So I did, you know, and then, you know, by the time the Zimmerman verdict came out, I'd moved to LA and, you know, was involved with the first freeway shutdown here. The 110 was our action. And so we were in the first Black Lives Matter meeting before they even, you know, knew what they were going to call themselves, but knew that they wanted to get out there and do something. And so the first time they did their protests in Beverly Hills, I went out and I did some poetry there, and we were able to definitely just, I mean, we were asked to come over there. We were asked to attend this meeting because we have a deep history in the police brutality movement in Los Angeles, because our organization has been active since 2003. So, I mean, we just wanted to see what we could lend to what they were doing, and credit to Black Lives Matter and making it Black-centered, because I think even though the movement against police terrorism is not exclusively Black, because the victims are not exclusively Black, but they've done a great job in highlighting the fact that there's such a disproportionate amount of Black people, and there's such an impunity in the ways that Black people are killed, and someone needs to highlight that, you know, and a lot of times it's easy to kind of marginalize Black people in all facets of life. So for them to bring a Black-centered focus to the movement is very helpful.
Tell me about that impunity that you were just referring to. I don't think a lot of people would actually get that right away. So what do you mean?
I mean, like, goodness, that a mass shooter like Dylann Roof can go into a church and sit and pray with Black folks and then slaughter the church afterward and still be taken, you know, and given a burger. And I'm not saying that people who shoot people need a burger. But what I'm saying is that with Black folks, they don't have to be armed at all. To get a firing squad, you know, and I'm not saying that there are no white victims of police brutality. I understand that there are. But what I'm saying is there's more of a tendency to try to preserve life when dealing with a white male or a white female, as opposed to, say, Corinne Gaines, who was murdered by Baltimore SWAT. And she was in her house and she was with her son. And SWAT officer just basically said, "Hey, I'm tired of this," and just shot through a wall and killed her. And then they went into her place. They murdered her in front of her 5-year-old son. And then they shot him in the face and in the arm. That is the type of impunity that we don't really see when it comes to, you know, white people in the United States. Again, so that's what I mean, is that they're killing Black children as well. Ayanna Jones was asleep on her grandmother's couch. And although Officer Weekly saw toys in the yard, they still used flashbang grenades and bullets. And they shot her in the head while she was sleeping on her grandmother's couch. I mean, I just mean that even children, even Black children are being slaughtered by law enforcement in this country.
So what has taken you to this, where you're at now? I mean, you're really dedicated to this, which is important. And I want people to know how you got there and why.
You know what? Honestly, just, you know, as foundational, I'm a Black woman in America first. I have an older brother, and it's as American as apple pie for Black folks to be scared of the police, for Black folks to recite their lines when a police car pulls behind them. And you're absolutely innocent and you've done nothing wrong. But just being in the proximity of police, you're rehearsing your lines on how to survive that encounter. So foundationally, that is where the fight started. From East Palo Alto, which is a city that was the murder capital in 94, and there was a lot of dope, and I didn't know how it got there. I didn't know that J. Edgar Hoover and, you know, the CIA, that they put that stuff near Oakland and the Black Panther Party to neutralize them. I didn't know about Gary Webb, the news reporter from San Jose, who supposedly shot himself twice in the head after he revealed what was going on. So I think when I found out that the reason that I was an orphan and the reason that my parents were both on dope wasn't just because they like went out and chose to go find it, but because our community was flooded with the drug and that it was a biological warfare against the Black community and against the breakfast programs that the Panthers were bringing into East Palo Alto. And that is foundational. And as far as the movement against police terrorism, very specifically, the families are the nucleus of that movement. And I think once you've had a chance to sit down and speak with some of the mothers, and especially with me as a mother, you want to draw the line in the dirt and make sure that this doesn't happen to anyone else again. And, you know, I'm a mother of a 2, a 7, and a 4-year-old. And I want to make sure, if I have to lay down my life, that they don't have to come out and protest this when they're grown.
Yeah, it's extremely important. Now, one of the things, you've been involved in a movement around South Central, bringing this all to South Central, bringing it to Watts. You know, let's talk about that, because, you know, I came here during the rebellion, that way back in the 90s, right? And I had lived in other places around here, you know, around the country, and been in other places for bits and periods of time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when I came here, mm-hmm. I came here just as the rebellion had broken out. Mm-hmm. And it was something that really, to me, it really changed. I saw a lot of people change in so many ways.
Mm-hmm.
There was the people actually feeling like, okay, we stood up.
Mm-hmm.
People also beginning to understand that, you know, when they listened to what did black people live like
mm-hmm.
here in terms of what was life like in a society like this, where they could talk about, we have Hollywood, we have this, we have all this great stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then just not even a 20-minute ride away from mm-hmm. downtown LA,
mm-hmm.
you had some of the poorest people living in the country there,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the,
mm-hmm.
and the kinds of things that were happening to people and the kind of lives that people had. And the fight that they made to actually stand up and say, we're not going to live like this anymore, really had a big impact on me. And I thought it was something that was very important in this neighborhood in terms of people standing up
mm-hmm.
and stepping out.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. You raised such a great point when you talk about that downtown is 20 minutes away from here, you know, and I've had times where, I mean, my family has been organizing in South Central for years and people don't show up. I could drive over to the Grove and just randomly run into celebrities that live in proximity to Los Angeles. And there was a huge uprising while Ferguson was happening in South Central LA. Ezell Ford's neighborhood and his family and his community are the ones who went out and said, we're going to keep protesting against the local police station. And then we came and said, okay, well, we know some other families. We're going to link you guys together. So let's go at the district attorney because she's the one who can prosecute. And so there should have been a lot of solidarity rather than people flying all the way to Missouri and into Ferguson because they were already in the limelight. People were paying attention to what was happening with Mike Brown and that movement. Not so much with Ezell Ford. And I feel like there were a lot of people that really betrayed Los Angeles in terms of people that did not come to check on South Central and say, like, what can I do to help? How can I roll my sleeves up? How can I dig my heels in? So, you know, it's very important, the work that's happening in South Central, because it's not getting that light, and 20 minutes away is all the, you know, the bright lights and whatnot. But I wish that those folks would come over to this side of town and see what folks are going through. And I believe that that is why Nipsey Hussle, the rapper who was slain last year, I think that's why he was so important to people, because he made it, you know, he was doing songs with Kendrick Lamar and Jay-Z's buying his mixtapes, but he never abandoned South Central. He never abandoned us. He didn't kiss the ring. When Trump came out and said he was running for office, they did a song FDT, you know, F Donald Trump. And that was a very militant stance to take. But, you know, when Kanye West was saying, hey, well, I would have voted for Trump. And when Steve Harvey was going and standing next to Donald Trump, Nipsey Hussle came out and said, this is the stance, and drew a line in the dirt. And he never abandoned South Central. I love him for that forever, because there are so many people that have a podium, they have a platform to speak, and they're silent.
So give people who are listening to this now, give them a sense of what does it mean to live in South Central in terms of what we're talking about, you know, the police terror that's just horrible and what people have to face day after day after day. Let's talk about, and other things, let's talk about what it means to live in South Central.
You know, what it means to live in South Central is it's very militarized police. I've never seen so many helicopters until I came to South Central. I've never been just talking in my bedroom and all of a sudden there's the light from a helicopter shining into the bedroom. They're very militarized, like the war machines that they're given to use against the people and the impunity that they're allowed to do it with. With the Ezell Ford movement, I saw where we'd be out there for the vigil and the police will be riding by and like smiling and laughing at a grieving family, just trying to commemorate their loved one. There would be 5 choppers in the air overhead. We're just standing out on the block organizing, but the egregious use of their resources, you know, I could see somebody hanging out of the helicopter filming us while we're standing outside. Leroy Hill, the witness to Ezell Ford's murder, he was executed right before his deposition. District Attorney Jackie Lacey and the city officials in Los Angeles said, hey, come forward. If there's a witness to what happened with Ezell Ford, come forward and we'll protect you. He was executed right before his murder. You know, the police blamed it on a street trial. Then, you know, his memorial with the mural on the wall was, you know, they put graffiti all over it. And when we were marching through South Central to that police station, people were coming together. It didn't matter what block you were from. It didn't matter. Just come and let, and we were marching places where people the day before would not have marched. And his cousin, Sebo the rapper, was making songs. And South Central was coming together, not just South Central, but even people who were not from South Central that came together. It was a multinational fight. It was black and brown unity. Ezell Ford's family, Omar Briggle's family. There were anarchists and there were people that found their lane and said, this is how we can help with the movement for Ezell Ford. And the way that I watched Los Angeles Police Department and Los Angeles city officials take that movement apart methodically, is, you know, example of South Central and what people are dealing with living here in terms of trying to even stand for any kind of accountability. The city officials and Los Angeles law enforcement is sick. Honestly, sick. I wouldn't want anybody to come live here and be black. I wouldn't suggest anyone to just move here because I'm afraid for my, you know, brothers or whoever to just be black living in South Central because the police are a whole nother animal here. They jumped out on Ezell Ford and in front of the entire community, they beat him up and people were telling him, hey, he's mentally ill. The cop turned around and aimed his pistol at the people and said, shut the fuck up. And then they turned and as they're beating him, the other cop said, shoot him. And he shot him and he said, shoot him. And he shot him. That is LAPD in a nutshell, that they will jump out on a mentally ill person, you know, who is not a gangbanger. And that is their go-to thing, that they were involved in a gang. It's so easy for them to assign people to gangbanging. It doesn't even matter. You could just live somewhere and live on a block and they're going to associate you to being involved in a gang. So, I mean, it's a whole nother animal with the way that they're militarized and the way that they're able to move with impunity here, and that our district attorney is absolutely trash. She does not prosecute police at all. You know, you're dealing with that, and then you're just dealing with the element that the police aren't actually protecting the people from the actual dangers that people, you know, a young woman's body was just found. And, you know, you would think that with impunity, they would prosecute, you know, people who murder children or people who murder women, people who were molesters and stuff. And they, you know, they're fine with that. Untested rape kits, like, but when it comes to unarmed people, they move with impunity. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
This is the Michael Slate Show, and we're talking with Kiana Salina from the Coalition for Community Control of Police in Los Angeles about the movement for justice for Dijon Kizzy.
Now, that brings me to one thing that's been very, very, I know it's really weighed a lot on your mind, and it's been a very important thing that people have stood up and started to do something around it, to fight around, and that was the execution of Dijon Kizzy.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
Sure. You know, we have been organizing, Coalition for Community Control over the Police have been organizing in that neighborhood for over a couple of years because that is where 16-year-old unarmed Anthony Weber was murdered on 107th in Budlong. And so just, a couple of blocks away, he was 16, he was unarmed, and with the same impunity, they shot him 16 times. I'm sorry, they shot him more times than that, but he was hit 16 times. And the paramedics were on standby, and the police would not let the paramedics come and assist him. They let him die. And then they, you know, kept changing their story, saying, oh, he must have passed the gun to somebody. Well, they couldn't produce a gun, so he must have passed it off to somebody. He must have tossed it. He must have, and no charges whatsoever. District Attorney Jackie Lacey can still prosecute as we speak, and that case is still open. And then on Dijon Kizzy, they made contact with him. They stopped him in the middle of a pandemic. They stopped him under the pretext of a bicycle code violation. And they made contact with him and allegedly, you know, according to their story, that he fled and that they caught up to him and that he dropped all of his clothing in a bag. Allegedly, they observed a gun that fell out of the bag on the ground away from him and they shot him. He wasn't near the bag. And it wasn't until people began to point out, well, if you're saying he dropped everything, and a handgun was supposedly in a bag that he dropped, and that means you knew that he was unarmed when you shot him. And when people began to push back and say that, then they updated their story, Los Angeles sheriffs, to say that, oh, he made a motion for the gun. So people know that this is two blocks away from where they murdered unarmed 16, a kid who had a 9-month-old child. And people stood up. People got tired. We organized. I mean, there was a spontaneous, you know, vigil and spontaneous protest the very night that it happened. And the next day, Coalition for Community Control over the Police organized the first march to the sheriff's station. And Congresswoman Maxine Waters heeded the call, and she came out with us to the sheriff's station. And she's had a history of coming out to support events in South Central. And she came out to support us and to demand charges for the murder of Dijon Kizzy. And so far, you know, they haven't released the autopsy report. They haven't released the names of the officers. We just had another march this past Saturday, and we invited a broad coalition of about a dozen organizations to join us. And when we were out there, I'm talking about kids with bubbles, people on, you know, roller skates. And we marched and we demonstrated peacefully. And they were still out there, Los Angeles sheriffs, with AR-15s trained on us the entire time at our peaceful demonstration. There are mothers of other police victims that were there talking, including the mother of, you know, Anthony A.J. Weber. And they had AR-15s trained on us. They were barricaded behind their super slinky, as I've heard it called. And they treated us like animals. They, you know, you had another sheriff next as a spotter with a rangefinder. Who are y'all going to war with? We're literally here with a microphone speaking. What are y'all, you know, expecting? They are the ones who are militarized. They are the ones who have all the weaponry. And they are dressed like they are in battle. And they're occupying our community. It's mind-blowing. I took my daughter on September 5th to a Black Lives Matter Los Angeles organized demonstration. And they were highlighting the fact that that Dijon Kizzy was killed under the pretext of a bicycle code violation. And they invited folks to come out with their roller skates and bikes. And so because it was such a family-oriented event, our family said, sure, you know, that sounds great. It's, you know, it's during the day. People are going to be out on roller skates and bikes. Great. So we came. We heeded the call. We brought our 4-year-old, our 2-year-old, and our 7-year-old behind the stage, between the barricade and the stage, you know, closer to the back of the stage. There was a little bit more space because people were not interested so much in engaging the sheriffs. There, you know, people were talking on the stage, people were skating in the middle of the street. And because there were, you know, fewer people and we were practicing social distancing, I took my 7-year-old daughter where it was less crowded and less concentrated with people. And there was a little more room for her to skate. We were several yards away from the barricade and sheriffs were even more yards away behind their barricade, closer to the building. There was nothing going on, and hence the reason it's not on videotape, because there was nothing going on to video. People were just, you know, kind of hanging around in the back of the stage, and, you know, and the concentration of people were in front of the stage. And I observed two munitions, like, hit the ground and caught a smoke. And I'm like, well, you know, we start coughing, and my child's there, and I walk up closer to the barricade. I'm like, hey, there's a 7-year-old back here. Because I didn't know if they were going to keep shooting. And one of the sheriffs took a weapon and just pointed it right at me. And so I turned around and I took my daughter to my husband. And, you know, he began rinsing her eyes and rinsing her mouth and, you know, washing her face and whatnot. And we packed up and we left. And people were angry. People were like, you guys just tear gassed a 7-year-old. And in response, they fired more munitions. So we left. We just was like, let's go. And in the following couple of days later, we go to do a press conference organized by RevCom, and aspiring politician, right-wing, you know, Republican black man named Joe Collins, who was running for 43rd congressional seat against Maxine Waters, he and his campaign manager and their filmmaker just come and crash the press conference while my daughter is speaking. And, you know, the Beverly White from, you know, her channel and a couple of people are like, hey, you know, there's a 7-year-old speaking, sir, can you wait? And they're like, shut this down. The campaign manager lied and said he was the cousin of Dijon Kizzy and that we were outside agitators. And I mean, they just sabotaged the press conference. And my daughter had already had to work up the courage just to go and be there and near sheriffs. And because of their sabotage, the sheriffs used that disruption as a pretext to begin to move in with their munitions and their riot gear. And so we had to flee. And then this aspiring politician who's not an officer in any way, they do a press conference the night before our demonstration saying how they are ready to meet demonstrators with force if we come out. And I'm like, he's collaborating with a so-called, you know, a self-appointed community leader and saying that they are ready to assist the sheriffs in meeting us with force and that we were outside agitators. Number one, if you live in Los Angeles County, this is your business. You're under the jurisdiction of the sheriffs. But Dijon Kizzy's aunt, Mrs. Fletcher Fair, came out and made a press statement a couple of days before saying, hey, look, I don't care where you come from. As long as you demonstrate peacefully, you're welcome. And you are welcome in this neighborhood. Don't listen to those guys. I am his aunt. And I'm not related to that man in any way. And I support Congresswoman Maxine Waters. So there was all this buildup going towards the demonstration with them collaborating with right-wing aspiring politicians to meet demonstrators with force. And we came out at least 400 strong this past Saturday. There were many families. And as I said, we marched to the sheriff's station and they were there behind their barricade. And someone named Sherman Austin took video and pictures, and they're there with a rangefinder and a spotter and snipers with AR-15s trained on us, not holstered, not available, not tear gas munitions, but AR-15s trained on us. And I didn't even know it until after. It was chilling because I could hear myself speaking in the video. And there were children out there. And there were people blowing bubbles, for God's sake, on roller skates. And so to hear my voice speaking and wondering, like, who was in his crosshairs at the time? Who was in his scope? What was he aiming at? Because they were all there and they were adjusting. And, you know, they were ready to declare war on us. You know, I don't even know why they call them back the boys in blue, because they're not in blue. They are wearing, like, fatigues, you know, I mean, just full army battle gear. What battle are they fighting? They're the ones murdering us. And we're on the outside of it, you know, and that's why our organization supports community control over the police and over the sheriffs. Protesting is not a strategy. We don't want to just keep coming out and essentially begging them. You know, it's a good way to draw attention to an issue and draw public pressure. But ultimately, we need power over these departments. We need power from top to bottom over that. We need to determine who gets the police in our neighborhoods, because the sheriff who shot Andres Guardado, the security guard who was murdered a couple of months ago, who was on his job, this guy lives in Covina. So we want firing and hiring authority. We want residency requirements that you have to come from these neighborhoods in order to police in these neighborhoods, rather than murdering one of our youth and then driving home to your suburb and sleeping it off. You know, so, I mean, it has really been hell lately, because since they tear gassed my daughter on September 5th, demonstrators, you know, were showing up, and not just for my daughter, but for Dijon Kizzy, of course. And they've been brutalizing them. I mean, they've been absolutely brutalizing peaceful demonstrators. I wish I knew their names. You know, just listening to them, a young woman saying that she was hit so hard in the head with something that her helmet came off, and that how glad she is that she had her helmet on, knees in the back. And even the reporter, Josie Huang, who came the night that the sheriffs were shot in their vehicle, a reporter showed up and they brutalized her. They threw her on the ground. They said that she didn't identify herself as press, when it's clear from the video she did. And the way that the media is just demonizing protests. Protest has become the trigger word. Now it's like, oh, they were protesting. There was a protest. I mean, I can recall just a couple of months ago that, you know, armed people stormed the Capitol because they wanted their cities to open up. They weren't demonized as protesters. They were, you know, hailed as patriots by Donald Trump. And Donald Trump was saying, hey, work with them. But four people showed up outside that hospital, I guess reveling in what happened to the sheriffs. And one person said, I hope you die. And the media takes that and says, protesters showed up and chanted, I hope you die. Four people is not a protest. If I organize a protest and four people show up, that is a failure. That's not a protest. So it's a demonization of it in order to form a narrative, you know, and blame us for what's going on, and blame us for demanding accountability for the people who are supposed to protect and serve us. So that has just been another element of it, is that the way that Sheriff Villanueva's had his say, and the way the media has carried that narrative, and the way just protests all by itself. There are a million ways to protest, and people hated it when Colin Kaepernick, you know, got down on one knee. There's no form of protest that's been acceptable against police terrorism. When people have an intention to be racist, there's no form of protest that's acceptable. And, you know, we're seeing that as far as protesting go, that people will take the worst that they have seen in a protest and assign that to all of them, but they won't take the worst that they've seen with law enforcement and apply that to all of law enforcement. And we're saying, hey, you know, we're living under this. We have to raise our children in this neighborhood. By the time Anthony Weber was 4 years old, he had lived out a quarter of his life because of sheriffs. And that's unacceptable. It's unacceptable. And children, youth are not off limits. And that's why we are drawing the line in the sand now, so that this doesn't have to be our future. This does not have to be the world that our children live in. And we're paying for this. They're doing this on our dime. So we should have the power to be able to enforce that. And no matter how we have to do it, if we have to get into a position on the city council to make a motion to amend the city charter for community control over the police, then we'll have to do it, whatever that we have to do. And we ran a city council campaign and grassroots against the local Democrats and the Republicans in our community. So, you know, we're just going to keep pushing out there and demanding accountability from District Attorney Jackie Lacey, Sheriff Villanueva, and the occupying force in our communities, the LAPD, and the sheriffs.
All right, you know, you covered just about everything I wanted to ask.
So. Okay, great.
So I want to thank you very much for telling us this.
Okay, no problem. Thank you.
And I look forward to talking with you again.
Okay.
This is the Michael Slate Show, and we've been talking with Kiana Salina from the Coalition for Community Control of the Police in Los Angeles, and we've been talking about the Movement for Justice for Dijon Kizzee. Before we go out, I want to let you know about some of the future protests that Andy Z was talking about. In recent days, Trump has laid out in detail how he plans to steal the election in November and stay in power indefinitely. He'll claim fraud if he loses, ram through Supreme Court nominees to settle it, and declare martial law to suppress protest. You can't say you didn't know. Many groups are planning to protest after the election if it looks like he's going to try to steal it or stay in power anyway. By that time, it could be too late. Take to the streets now with Refuse Fascism. Daily actions start October 3rd. Here's the announcement from the website, refusefascism.org. And please, all through this next couple of months, go to that website as often as you can and find out what's going on and what you can do. It's on, the struggle for the future. Will it be fascist or will we act on our own conscience? October 3rd, we begin. Nonviolent protests that continue day after day from now through the elections, united by the demand, Trump Pence out now. And that brings us to the end of yet another show. I want to thank my assistant producer, Henry Carson, my production assistant, Jeff Pryor, and each and every one of you for tuning in. If you want to share your thoughts and ideas about the show, or if you want to volunteer to be part of the show, write to me at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Once again, that's mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. We're going to go out now with We Rise, DJ FM's As Above, So Below remix. Check this out.